Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 174, recorded Saturday, April 10th, 2021. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. One topic on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast, taproom tourism. Coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios in Chicago, Illinois, as things here start to open up from winter and COVID shutdowns, increasing temperatures and vaccination rates have got people out and about. Restaurants and bars are opening up. Irene and I got a jump start on the better weather by flying out to San Diego on St. Patrick's Day, kind of, you know, skipping amateur hour here and heading out west. Just to hang out at an Airbnb in Ocean Beach, just a block off the ocean and a couple of blocks south of Newport Avenue, the main drag that surprised me with its kind of hippie surfer vibe, which I liked. It reminded me of Huntington Beach, just a little bit further north in California. It reminded me of Huntington Beach in the mid-80s when my folks moved out there before they tarted it all up. Not my folks, the city of Huntington Beach. I give Ocean Beach credit for resisting the pressure to tart it up for the facelift for the architectural boat docks, even if it meant that I had to cross the street to avoid the homeless guy changing his pants on the sidewalk when I was walking back with my morning coffee and donuts. It was a low-key trip, though. Nothing scheduled, no real itinerary, mostly walk on the coast during the day, beaches, or some rocks looking at the tidal pools. And then at night, spent some time chipping away at the list of, I don't know, some 150 microbrewery tap rooms that are in the San Diego area. It's a lost cause for sure, but one I willingly threw myself at. Indeed, the only time we really looked closely at time, at hours and at a watch, was Sunday afternoon, and that was just to make sure that I could get all my gotta-go, top-of-the-list tap rooms done before they closed, since we were flying back the next day, Monday, after lunch. The bookends to the trip, the flights out and back on United, though, were a bit more stressful. The flights were just about completely full, and for some reason, United kept shoving me out of my aisle seat into the adjacent middle seat. But because I did check those seats, especially after receiving United's "we're full, you can move to another flight for free" email before each of the flights, there was kind of enough time for me to rejigger our seats to adjacent aisles, which gave each of us a bit of room to lean away if the middle seat next to us was full, which they were. But the bigger and, I have to say, honestly, more surprising hassles were mask compliance. On the flight out of O'Hare, the guy in the row behind me had kind of a loud, extended grumble session with his seatmate after the flight attendant told him to pull his mask up over his nose. I thought the guy was winding himself up for a protest and, you know, stand up and say, "Hell no, I'm not taking any more," and therefore delaying our flight. But he eventually calmed down. The flight back was worse for Irene. A young couple with an infant landed in the middle and window seats next to her. Both continually pulled their masks down below their chins. At some point, the husband fell asleep and started snoring in the middle seat with his down. And this is after the flight attendant made a number of clear and very pointed announcements on mask rules. I mean, this all really surprised me. All our prior flights, Nashville, Philly, Phoenix, there wasn't any of this. Now, look, I'm no mask scold, but like I said in the last episode, everyone agrees to wear a mask before they check in. So if you've got a personal objection or don't think you can handle 4 hours, just don't get on the plane. Don't make it tough for the rest of us. And if you do, well, you know, maybe think about treating yourself to a new mask before you fly. One with new elastic that'll hold up over your nose. So following up, longtime Travel Commons listener Nick Gassman sent in a note about last episode's travel insurance update and COVID-related coverage. Nick writes, "In the UK, a recent survey found that whilst insurers would give you emergency medical cover if you caught COVID when you were away, none would cover you if the government advised against travel because of COVID and therefore you could not travel. Some would give you cancellation coverage if you were diagnosed with COVID before travel, and others would further give cancellation cover if you had to self-isolate even without a positive test. As ever with insurance, the thing is to make sure you understand the small print and to compare policies. Well, Nick, thanks for that. I think the advice to read the small print is sort of valid in life in general and in travel insurance in particular. I think the pandemic and known event carve-outs that were lurking in that small print caught a lot of travel insurance holders, kind of caught them short back when the initial lockdowns hit. I wonder, a year on after all that, how many more people are clicking through the buy travel insurance box that kind of pops up at the bottom of their Expedia booking page and click through to the full rider and doing a control F in the browser to search for the word COVID. In the past couple of episodes, I've been talking about my efforts to decipher the activity rules for British Airways' frequent flyer program to stave off a year-end extinction event for my what is a non-significant amount of Avios points. Since I'm not planning to fly BA anytime soon, I booked our Ocean Beach Airbnb through a link on BA's site, and to my pleasant surprise, I saw 1,800 Avios points automatically hit my account a week later. Now, I can't seem to find on the website the expiration date to see if that updated, but I'm pretty sure this reset the 36-month clock. And it was a nice find, actually, the Airbnb Avios link. It let me double-dip on Avios and Chase Ultimate points for that Airbnb. I'm not sure when I'll get to spend either of them, but it was a nice little get. In the last episode, I talked about having to work through a lot of cars in the Hertz Phoenix Airport lot to find one with less than 24,000 miles. Now, in the San Diego Airport Hertz lot, I had to work to find a car, period. We walked to the five-star aisle, and it was empty. I tried to flag down a Hertz employee, but he just waved me off. After, I don't know, about 5 minutes, a car did show up. I didn't even bother to look at the mileage. We just got in it and drove off. I was late for a lunch date with a beer and a fish taco. Now, returning the car, I did my normal drill. Top off the tank, get a receipt, and then when dropping it off, I placed the receipt on the dashboard and then the keys on top of it so the check-in guy will see it because they're always looking for the keys. It usually works. Except this time. The Hertz receipt hit my email as we were in the rental return bus trundling around the perimeter of the airfield. I open it up and I see a fuel charge. I mean, really? The last time this happened was about 4 years ago in Atlanta Airport, and back then I hit Twitter and the Hertz team had it all fixed in about a half hour. This time, their Twitter team got back to me pretty quick asking for the rental agreement details, but then nothing. I ping them the next day. Nothing. And then the next day, nothing, just dead air. So I went on the Amex website, I challenged it, and got the fueling charge and associated taxes credited back in a couple of days, and then, you know, just sort of moved on. Until earlier this week, 2 weeks later, Hertz popped up on my Twitter DMs asking for yet more information. I got to tell you, it is just amazing how fast Hertz's service has cratered during this bankruptcy, which makes me wonder how long it's going to take them to recover. A Travel Commons listener, LA Flyer, replied to my initial Twitter blast saying, "Left the likes of Hertz and Avis years ago, regardless of the so-called elite benefits, have been using Sixt and Silver Car since." Well, I have to tell you, LA Flyer, I may be running down that path. It's either that or I got to get some good discount codes for Avis. And also this week, there was a spate of articles about Uber and Lyft driver shortages. Now, Irene and I experienced it firsthand trying to get a morning ride to O'Hare for our San Diego flight. I swallowed hard and agreed to a good-sized surge. We waited for a while and still had the Uber driver cancel on us at the last minute. It shouldn't be surprising, though. I mean, drivers left the platforms when demand cratered at the start of the pandemic. And actually, last May, so May 2020, which was when everything shut down, Uber said that their volume was down 80% versus the prior May, that is May 2019. And in Chicago specifically, I think the run of Uber drivers getting carjacked at the beginning of this year probably didn't help driver retention either. But with stimulus checks in the bank and vaccine rates rising, demand for rides has snapped back, a lot faster than driver supply. The headline of the Financial Times article reads, Uber and Lyft throwing money at U.S. drivers to ease shortage, and says that Uber is spending $250 million on a one-time stimulus package. These stimulus packages are getting popular. So a one-time stimulus package of driver incentives. But even with that, it's going to take time to onboard even returning drivers. They got to redo vehicle inspections, background checks. Way back in episode 160, which was my last pre-pandemic episode back in February 2020, I talked then about the shrinking difference between Uber and Lyft and taxi cabs, and how actually I've found myself beginning to shift back to cabs, both for airport rides and just for other regular rides. These recent experiences with Uber are only accelerating that in my mind. I'm thinking I may need to reload taxi dispatch numbers back into my iPhone. And hey, if you've got any travel stories, questions, comments, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, like Nick Gassman did. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, like L.A. Flyer did. Post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or on the Instagram account at Travel Commons. Or, as always, you can post those comments on our fab new website at travelcommons.com. So the only topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is taproom tourism. Putting together the new website, this fab new website, I was thinking about what to put across the top menu. So subscribe and episodes were a given, but I also put food and beer because, well, I like to talk about them a lot. But then when I clicked through that new beer menu, it felt a little sparse. And so, in the craft beer tradition of collabs, collaboration brews, I pinged Rob Cheshire, a longtime Travel Commons listener and now craft beer podcaster with his This Week in Craft Beer podcast. We got on a Zoom call to talk about why we go out of our way to find brewery tap rooms and how he organizes his travels to hit the most tap rooms he can on each visit. So what are you drinking?
So I've got a This Is Bone Machine Brew Co. I had on the podcast about 6 weeks ago.
I'm doing a Springbok from Half Acre, about 6.8%. It's not good shy beer. Yeah. Taproom tourism. Why do we go and search out brewery taprooms as opposed to the cool beer bar?
You want to be drinking at the source, I think, is the first point. So, you know, it's just in terms of freshness and, quite frankly, value for money, but also variety and just everything's better without the middleman. If I can sit and chat to the brewer while I'm drinking their beer, then so much the better. At least even the guy behind the bar is going to know a lot more about products and the, you know, the nature of the business than your average barman, you know, as good as they might be. It's always better dealing direct, I think.
As I was thinking about it, I had that same set of thoughts. First of all, there's more selection. And especially if you want to go past the usual suspects. So if you want to go past the usual IPAs, maybe random stouts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the light wheat that they'll put on to keep the non-beer drinkers happy. if you want to get past that and you want to see where that brewer is kind of stretching their muscles a little bit, then you're right. You got to go to the tap room because nobody else is going to take it, right?
No, absolutely right. Yeah.
And to your point also, you know, from a cost standpoint, you're going to be able to do flights or at least small pours, which means you're going to be more willing to try the wacky beer.
Definitely. I want to taste every single beer in the tap room if I can. Another aspect, I just like the atmosphere in tap rooms. Some of them are super slick and, you know, fabulously well fitted out, and others of them are literally some barrels to sit on or empty pallets, complete extremes of decor. But they're always sort of charming in their own way. And there's something about being at a brewery that pleases me, even if I'm not drinking.
My undergraduate degree is in chemical engineering.
Okay.
And I never practice as a chemical engineer. But having said that, I really like to go and look at breweries. There was one time we were in Portland. The brewery was in the basement. I'm kind of looking at it going, how in the hell did they get these tanks down here? Because there was no obvious way that you could get a massive steel tank down into this basement.
No.
And then we ended up sitting wedged in a table between three fermentation tanks. It wasn't like we were looking at the
brewery. No, you were actually in the integral part of it. Yeah. Yeah. I had a very similar experience actually at one of the new local breweries that's opened up here in Reading that I've become quite friendly with called Crafty Cats. Mm. And they're brewing in an impractical barn, you know, terribly difficult to sanitize everything. It's a sort of broken concrete floor. They went round this brewing and we started actually with the finished beer. And then he said, well, now taste this and taste this and taste this. And literally we're getting right back to the last one we tasted. It was the first time I've ever tasted that, what I can only describe as a sort of a overwhelming smell of brewer's yeast that you get in a brewery. Mm. That was what this liquid tasted like. And I've never tasted anything quite like it before. It was a really interesting experience.
How do you plan your taproom visits?
It's all driven through Google for me, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I might have some idea based on previous reading or whatever about some big name places that I want to visit in a particular city. But beyond that, I'm just going to Google, first of all. I'll plot a Google map for the city, and I'll end up with 50, 60, maybe even 100 pins on the map. Pretty quickly, I'll go to Untappd and look at the average brewery rating. And this really makes brewers cross how much I rely on Untappd for this type of thing. Because I had this conversation a load of times on the podcast with them. But I do rely on brewery ratings on Untappd, and I find them very reliable, quite frankly. If a brewery's got an average rating of anything close to 4, then that is going to be, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, obviously it's a massive generalization to say whatever they brew, but most of their beers are going to be great. If the brewery rating is anywhere close to 3.5, it's going to be very mediocre at best. Mm-hmm. You know, and somewhere in between is where most people land. So 3.6, it's 3.8, yeah, it's a good brewery. 3.9, it's a terrific brewery. 4 is a great brewery. And so I'm looking for those 3.8s and 3.9 average brewery ratings. What I'm looking for really is that district where I can walk from one to another and really make an afternoon of it.
But that's the kind of the DIY spin. And I know, Rob, that you're doing with This Week in Craft Brewing, you guys are launching tours. Good Lord willing and COVID don't rise.
Yeah. I've been lucky enough to travel pretty frequently to the East Coast of the US for business trips, particularly over the past 10 years. And so I've always been comfortable with traveling in the US. And in the last few years, I've been basing my travel around taproom visits, quite frankly. And so I've been doing business trips where, yeah, I have some business meetings, but really what I'm doing is trying to plan my schedule so I'm in the right place at the right time each evening to visit the taprooms that I want to visit. And so, you know, I've become quite familiar with the tap rooms most of the way down the East Coast. Since then, I've got my This Week in Craft Beer business, if you want to call it a business, off the ground. It's a fun side project. We publish a weekly newsletter and we do a weekly podcast, doing a different interview with a UK craft brewer each week. And so in conversation with the brewers, I started to float the idea with them either sort of before or afterwards when we're wrapping up and finishing off the beer and whatever. You know, I would say to them, well, I'm thinking about putting together tours to the US. Does that sound like something you'd be interested in? And so sort of on the back of a few of those conversations, I started to figure out that what we could do is actually promote it with the brewer and basically sell it to the brewer's customers and have the brewer come on the tour. So we'll put together a schedule where we're going to visit, you know, hopefully some amazing tap rooms. From what I know about how brewers react to being visited by other brewers, usually they get the red carpet out. You know, brewers are very hospitable. It's almost like a sort of a private members club. You know, one brewer visits another brewer and they're made supremely welcome. So I'm hoping that we can leverage that. And I think we can put together a pretty killer 5-day, 4-night tour where we visit 2 tap rooms a day and have a fantastic curated experience at each one.
You may be seeing a whole nother series of collabs, of cross-Atlantic collabs. Yeah. Here's the last thing I wanted to think about. Best, worst, most unusual taproom experience. It got me thinking about the number of times that going to taprooms, search them out, and then going out to them has taken me to parts of town that I would not normally go. I mean, it busts you out of what I've called in the past, you know, the travel bubble or the tourist route.
I've been to a few places where I probably shouldn't have been in search of tap rooms. You know, that's the thing, isn't it? As well as, you know, I think I can remember once in Baltimore where I ended up probably in a slightly down on its luck neighborhood, let's call it that, for want of a better turn of phrase. And that's, you start to think, well, maybe, you know, is there a tap room down here? And maybe I shouldn't perhaps be wandering this district. I don't know. But I do, what I do know when I'm in the US is I can always break out my British accent. And that, you know, it doesn't matter how sort of threatening the bad guys. Look, as soon as they hear I'm from the UK, they immediately become unofficial tour guides, and you know, they want to point me in the right direction and give me advice and make sure I'm enjoying my visit to their city. And it's an extraordinary experience. And this, you know, it's overwhelming, that level of hospitality that we always get from Americans. And that's, it's not an exaggeration to say that, you know, I don't think I could find myself in any part of any city where that didn't work. And it hasn't happened yet anyway. So I probably once too many, I'll push that luck too far and it'll... it's worked so far anyway.
And again, you talk about doing business trips. I was in mid-Jersey and I found this place, Demented Brewing, and I found it on Untappd. Mm-hmm. And so we head out there. We find it. It's across the street from a glass repair shop and sort of kitty corner from a motorcycle repair shop. But no food, no food trucks or anything. Said, okay, well, we're going to need to lay a base here. And so across the street was this little place with an El Salvadorian flag hanging out the front of it. And it's some little family restaurant slash bodega thing. And we roll in there. They look at us like, who in the hell are you guys? We go, we like the menu posted up on the wall. It's like pupusas. I don't know. We're like, give us all of them, right? Just like give us one of all. We're going to do a flight of pupusas. And then we went back across the street. But at that time in New Jersey, they had to give you a tour. Oh, okay. Yeah, so you hit that too. You had to do
a
tour.
I've been to more places in Jersey than probably
the
anywhere else, actually. Yeah, more
it's the only place I've had that happen is in Jersey. Okay, well, you got to do a tour. Then you can have beer at the tap room. I was like, okay, fine. Cool. It was a very abbreviated tour.
I actually watched that policy evolve in 2018 from at the start of the year, where they were quite strict about saying, yeah, we've got to give you a bit of a tour, you know. And after a while, it got to the stage where they just had laminates printed where they'd shown you the map of the brewery. If you'd like us to come and show you any particular feature on this, please let us know. But just otherwise, you can just sit at the bar and look at it while you have your beer. And so they'd obviously sort of figured out that that was sufficient to satisfy the local regulations. Probably my best taproom experience in Asia was in Hanoi, Vietnam. And there's a bar there called the Standing Bar, which I think is by far the most celebrated craft beer bar in probably the whole of Vietnam, actually. Great selection of beer. When we were there, they had a comedy night and they'd flown in English-speaking comedy acts from a number of different Asian capitals. And it was fantastic. There's a big local beer scene in Vietnam. It's called Beer Hoi. Beer is spelled B-I-A. Beer Hoi is basically lager, 3.5, 3.8%, I think, but served almost ice cold in iced glasses. So it's drunk extremely. I mean, it's very hot and humid there, of course. Right. And these Beer Hoi bars are, to say they're on every street is understating it. It's about every third shopfront is a Beer Hoi bar. And they're not bars in the way that you would recognize that term. They're oftentimes, it's just a little sort of plastic furniture almost in like the front room on the ground floor, you know. So you walk in there and you sit down, and they're always really tiny because we're obviously taller than the Vietnamese. So you know, you sort of got your knees under your chin sitting. It felt like it was going back to kindergarten, where you're going to the parents' evening at school and you're sitting on the tiny chairs that are designed for the 5 and 6 year olds. It was exactly like that, these Beer Hoi bars. It was a good experience drinking Beer Hoi. It's crap beer, of course, but, you know, it was just, you know, it's cold and very refreshing. You can drink lots of it because it's very weak. But the point is, the Beer Hoi is like 20 cents a pint, something like that. It's super, super cheap. And the beer in the Standing Bar was, quite frankly, you know, Western European craft beer prices and then some. You know, you were paying probably $10 plus for a pint, maybe more than that, you know. And so this was a good beer. You know, they had some good Vietnamese beers. They had imported beers from around Asia. So it was a good choice of craft beer, as I would recognize that. But 20, 30 times the price of the local beers, you know. And so it was, I mean, bringing it back to the comedy night, several of the comedians were absolutely ripping into the crowd saying, you know, what are you guys doing here? How on earth can you justify paying the price of the beer in this bullshit bar when you could be next door drinking pints of Beer Hoi, you know, with the locals for 20 cents a pint? You know, it's ridiculous. You should be ashamed of yourselves. And they were absolutely right. It was a good experience.
All right, man.
No, that's fine, Mark. Yeah, great chatting to you. We'll speak again soon.
Catch up soon. Take care.
Nice one. Thanks. Right, cheers. Bye.
Bye. So thanks again to Rob Cheshire for that collab. I hope you could tell that it was a lot of fun. Indeed, the full session ran about an hour and a half, and took a bit more beer. If you want to hear more of our taproom stories, head over to Rob's This Week in Craft Beer podcast feed. He posted a longer version of the conversation as a bonus Easter episode. Or you can check out the Travel Commons website, the Facebook page, or the YouTube channel for the full video. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 174. I hope you all enjoyed the show, the collab with Rob, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The new website makes it a lot easier to subscribe. There's a drop-down menu at the top of each page, a set of subscribe links at the bottom, and a big red subscribe button in the middle of the homepage. So no excuses. You can use all those buttons, links, menus, or you can just search for us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, or Amazon Music. Or you can ask Alexa, Siri, or Google to play Travel Commons on your smart speaker. And then across the bottom of each page on the website, you'll find links to the Travel Commons socials, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Hey, if you've already subscribed, how about leaving us a review on one of those sites? It helps people find this podcast and join the happy band of travelers. And thanks to Nick Gassman, not only for the emails, but also for calling out Travel Commons in the recommended podcast section of his blog site. And as always, if you have a comment, thought, story, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or to M. Peacock on Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons Facebook page, on the Travel Commons Instagram site, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. I really appreciate it. Until we talk again next month, take care. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.